In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Tuesday, March 12, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in our Executive Suite series, we continue with our Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. My colleague Jason Miller here today to join in the conversation about the survey. Today, looking at our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey. And Jason, tell us more about that survey, and then we'll introduce our guest today.
Excellent. So this is one of our CXO priority surveys. This is obviously the chief acquisition officers. And this was our highest survey yet in terms of the number of respondents. 28 chief acquisition officers, deputy chief acquisition officers, senior procurement executives responded. We did this in over a two-week period in the January-February timeframe. Of that, 13 of the respondents were cabinet agencies, transportation, VA. 10 were large agencies, GSA, EPA. And then 5 were considered smaller independent agencies. Of the respondents, 22 were career employees, 5 were political employees, and of the respondents, 8 were chief acquisition officers, 8 were senior procurement executives, and 12 were what we called other senior level acquisition managers. So we got a good cross-section of people, cross-section of agencies, and a good cross-section of political appointees versus career, and I thought the results were fascinating.
And a great guest to talk about the results of this survey, Nick Nyack, is the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. Nick, it's great to see you. We were talking before we went on the air. You and I have spoken on the phone before. It was great to have you in the studio here to talk about these results.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here and happy to answer all the questions related to the survey.
Excellent. Let's talk first about your role at DHS, and I guess the first thing is we're doing a Chief Acquisition Officer survey, and you're the Chief Procurement Officer. So a little bit of a difference in just the nomenclature there. Does that make any difference in your job responsibilities?
Actually, yes, it does. Great question. And so here's how our structure is at Homeland Security. We do have a chief acquisition officer. That's Rafael Boras, who is also the undersecretary for management. So he hovers over acquisition. And what is acquisition? I mean, in its simplest form, it's essentially programs and procurements. I'm the chief procurement officer. I'm over the 1,400 contracting professionals who manage 99,000 contracting transactions annually, spending $17.1 billion. That's the procurement side. We're not in the business to simply award contracts at DHS. We award contracts to support programs, and it's those programs that assist in protecting the United States. So the chief acquisition officer hovers over it all. My world is all contracts.
And the meat of what you do is the kinds of things that we ask questions about. When we dug into the priorities, which is the whole point of this series, overall, the highest rated priority for 2013 among your peers is the acquisition workforce. Retaining the people that you have now was even a bigger priority than bringing new people in. Is that the experience that you're seeing at DHS as you think about those 1,400 people that you work with?
I would say that holds true across government, and then DHS is not unique in that regard. Let me kind of frame it a little bit for DHS. So that you can kind of see the weight of what acquisition workforce means and then why we care about recruiting, developing, and retaining the acquisition workforce. We have roughly about 7,000 to 8,000 people who are identified as members of the acquisition workforce. I mean, who are they? What do they do? They're program managers hovering over. We've got a little bit more than 500 programs in DHS. They are individuals that we call contracting officers, technical representatives. We have several thousand of those. That's usually a part-time duty, but very important. And then, as I mentioned, we have the 1,400 contracting folks. But, you know, we've got 7,000, 8,000 members of the acquisition workforce holding up a significant portion of the DHS budget, the $17.1 billion.
When you look at the attrition levels that you're experiencing there, and there's always churn in any workforce, no matter how good or bad times are, but what are the reasons that you hear? Are there themes for the reasons that people decide that this work is no longer for them?
Yeah, so you really look at these stats, and in our case, they're kind of like this. About 40% of our workforce have 1 to 5 years of experience. Now, I'm going to explain why that is in just a second. And another 40 are hovering around retirement. So we had been hearing before all of the economic issues that happened in the country that there was going to be an enormous retirement boom across government. Acquisition is no different. What we saw, though, is that actually slowed down a little bit because of the economic issues. However, in our world, in the acquisition world, we did have a significant number of people who retired, and we have a growing number who are retirement eligible. And so what we put in place at DHS was our own intern program for the entire acquisition workforce. We were very fortunate to get tremendous support from the secretary on down for this. We have people that were developing, again, in those categories, program managers, contracting folks, and the like. And we've got a very well designed 3-year program where they get all the experience and education and training. And then we drop them into the various components within DHS. It's going extremely well. But to go back to sort of the survey and what the survey was telling us, acquisition workforce is always going to be a concern, because if you have 40% of the workforce that are retirement eligible, we just don't know when that 40% are going to take off. So there may be one moment or day in time where we need to supplement our intern program with other efforts to hire mid-level folks.
And that's when you steal from other agencies, right?
No.
But that's the biggest
concern. Making friends and influencing people is Jason Miller, everybody.
If I could just mention about stealing from other agencies, because the answer is totally yes. Everybody does it. But we should never be afraid of that. In other words, if I develop someone in acquisition, and remember, people are living lives. They're not living work. So a great individual then has life circumstances that occur and they end up at another government agency. Well, you know, we're all part of one U.S. government. So, you know, we don't operate from fear when it comes to developing people. We just need to develop them, and we hope that they stay in our system, in the government.
I think that's actually really refreshing that you look at it that way, because so many people get so worked up over, well, I just spent money training the person, and I just spent time. We got to know them, and they're doing such a good job, and now they're moving onward and not necessarily upward. How do you deal with that workforce balance? Because a lot of times you hear, at least from our perspective at DHS, people say, I loved working at DHS, but boy, was that the hardest job I've ever had. And after so many years, I get burned out. Do you have that work-life challenge with acquisition, or is that more, do you hear that maybe more in the program areas?
First of all, I think you hear that everywhere. You know, just across the board. But how do you deal with it as a leader is the important part. So it would be providing clear leadership direction and being professional and always taking the high road and setting that example amongst your entire leadership. DHS is tough. I mean, we're doing tough work. We're working to solve problems that are big problems that are evolving all the time, and it's serious business. You're trying to protect the United States of America at the least cost to the American taxpayer. So let's not hide from it being tough work. What can we do to make sure that folks, they definitely enjoy the mission, but that they stay longer? Number one, very clear leadership direction, as being very specific in what we ask them to do. And then also being very, very professional. The number one reason people stay at their job is because they like their boss. And so these are the kinds of things that we try to drive through. In terms of clear leadership direction, in my world, in the contracts world, you can see out on the internet for all to see our strategic plan with our four priorities and our annual progress report against that strategic plan. So it very clearly lays out in only 2 pages, this is what we did in the previous year, our accomplishments, and then here's the direction to the workforce moving forward in the next fiscal year.
I'm fascinated by the number that you gave me, 40% of your workforce, 1 to 5 years of experience, 40% close to retirement. Is that within 5 years of retirement, would you say, or what's the – can we pin that down at all?
Yeah, I don't have the specifics, but it's hovering around retirement eligibility.
5 to 10 years, I would think.
Yeah.
But which indicates that you have the same trough in the middle that just about every other federal agency has, and not just in the acquisition workforce. How do you think that you're doing at that knowledge management transfer, where your older folks are transferring the information to the younger folks that they're going to need when those older folks are not there anymore?
So that's a fantastic question, because you're absolutely right. Okay, so what are we doing in DHS? As I mentioned, our intern program, Number one, during a three-year period, the interns rotate around so they get familiarity with the various components at DHS. Obviously, we tried to expose them to all the different kinds of work because acquisition is pretty broad. Lots of stuff that you can get involved in and that you could ultimately specialize in one area. But in addition to that, we've got mentoring, we've got coaching, and those are the areas where that's where you get the real knowledge transfer on the ground. When you're doing something and a senior person is sitting there beside you sharing all of their knowledge.
I want to touch on some of the things. This list has 9 components on it that we asked you and your peers about, the top priorities for 2013. When we come back, Nick, I want to touch on some of the other ones at the top of the list and then ask you a question about some of the ones that were closer to the bottom. Nick Nyack's our guest, the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. He's here to talk about our CAO survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priorities Series, sponsored by VMware. My colleague Jason Miller and I back in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Montaigne. Every time my Uncle Willie tells me about his service in Patton's Third Army in World War II, I'm reminded of what we owe the U.S. Army. 14 generations of American soldiers who have courageously defended our nation. Their stories represent the best of America and should never be forgotten. Join me to help build the National Museum of the United States Army, a long overdue tribute to all American soldiers. To learn more, visit armyhistory.org.
Tune in weekly to the Financial Safari and get that common sense approach to financial and retirement planning.
I mean, I like to have guarantees instead of hoping and praying when we're talking about retirement. The person who has you in the risk account doesn't want you to know about it. If you try to do everything yourself, you don't have a team behind you giving you the advice, but more importantly, telling you what's wrong. Just stop doing bad things in your portfolio. It could take the worry out of living in retirement.
Tune in to the Financial Safari with Coach Pete DeRuda and local trusted advisor Michael Kinnett, Sunday mornings at 8 on 1500 AM.
As the U.S. government adopts cloud services, virtualization, and other technologies, it must also look toward an integrated and enhanced network infrastructure. HP Converged Infrastructure, with the Flex Network architecture as the cornerstone, can revolutionize how data centers are built. Using a standards-based approach, HP Networking delivers a simpler, more secure infrastructure, enables agile service delivery, and drives business value from core to edge. Combined with HP servers, storage, and services, HP Networking protects businesses across physical and virtual environments, delivers application services in minutes versus days, and reduces networking costs. The HP Converged Infrastructure integrates servers, storage, and networking, eliminating technology silos and freeing up resources so you can focus on innovation. To plan your strategy or to learn about their open flow-enabled edge switches with full lifetime warranty and no licensing required, talk to an HP representative at 800-277-8988. That's 800-277-8988.
Are you a civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State? You may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/term life to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Wednesday's Federal Drive. The IRS, like so many agencies, feels cash-strapped, and it's facing an exodus of experienced talent. The IRS Human Capital Officer David Krieg explains a creative approach to developing senior managers. Plus, the State Department reports progress in making its embassies around the world just a little greener. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Nick Nyack of the Homeland Security Department is here to talk about our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. And, Nick, we talked about the number one priority as ranked by you and your peers in our survey in the first segment, and that's retaining the acquisition workforce that you have. Second on the list was workforce training. Are you starting to feel the budget effects already of sequestration on training? People say that's one of the first things that goes when times get tight.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's one of the first things that goes. It really shouldn't be the first thing that goes. I mean, you are going to have workforce remaining when you have budget cuts, and you got to make sure that that workforce does more with even less. So I just want to say for Homeland Security, and by the way, with all of these priorities, they're all of equal value. You've got to make all of these things work. But with respect to training, the nice thing, DHS is – enormous secretarial support. Our Chief Acquisition Officer, Rafael Boris, is a champion of acquisition in the acquisition workforce. And fortunately for us, we have a Homeland Security Acquisition Institute, which runs nearly 300 courses. Now, you have to remember that most of the training that that the acquisition workforce takes is mandatory training prescribed by the Office of Management and Budget. And so we need to keep that going. We do keep that going. We train about 6,000 students per year through our Acquisition Institute. So I feel pretty good about where we're at. Are there cuts in general everywhere? The answer is sure there are. But are we going to take care of our employees and make sure they are equipped as best as possible? The answer is yes, we are.
The third on this list is hiring more acquisition workers, and that fits with that trough concept that we talked about in the first segment, where you have 40% of your people within 5 years of starting their careers and 40% toward the ends of their careers. But I wanted to get to the bottom of this list, because some of these items that wound up on the bottom of our list are things that people would think this must be on the top of your mind. Number 7 out of 9 was finding efficiencies in the acquisition process to help my agency deal with potential budget cuts. Number 8 was using strategic sourcing contracts more often. Number 9 was use more small businesses, including 8A, SDB, small women-owned, Hub Zone, et cetera, et cetera. Are those low priorities, is it your sense, or just lower than some of these other things that are big kahunas that we've talked about already?
So here's how I kind of define priorities. My four priorities in contracting within acquisition at DHS are quality people. You got to have quality people. This is acquisition is something that's done mostly by people. So quality people, quality contracting, quality program support, because, again, we're not just in business to award contracts. We award contracts to support programs that protect the country. And then quality engagement with industry. If you're spending $17.1 billion, you have got to do a number of things to engage with industry. And it's continuous. There's no spot and you're done. You have to continuously do it. Those are the priorities. Within the priorities, we have numerous initiatives, and they're all important, and you essentially highlighted some of the initiatives. For instance, small business. In our case in DHS, I'll just share, of the top 7 spending agencies that account for 90% of the $500 billion that are spent by the United States government, we're the only agency that has achieved an A from SBA on its annual scorecard over the last 3 years. Strategic sourcing, big area of efficiency. Our secretary had an efficiency efficiency review initiative. Strategic sourcing is a big part of that efficiency initiative. We've saved over $1 billion since we began the strategic sourcing program. So, you know, I would say they're all of equal importance, all important, and we're driving all of them all the time.
Let's take up strategic sourcing for a second, because I think that's a hot topic. It's one topic that there's a lot of concern about among small businesses, and I think a growing concern about large businesses. And one of the survey questions we asked, number 13, if you're following along at home, is the idea, will strategic sourcing save my agency money? It was an agree-disagree answer. 10 people said agree, 9 said disagree, and 5 said they weren't sure. When we asked the follow-up, is it good for small businesses, only 2 said they agree with that. 10 said they disagree, and 13 said they're not sure. So there's still a lot of uncertainty around it. From your perspective, you guys have had a lot of success with strategic sourcing, saving millions and millions of dollars. Talk a little bit about what you guys did with that.
Yeah, let me give several data points. So we have a little bit more than 15,000 contractors at DHS, all doing wonderful work. 11,000 of the 15,000 are actually small businesses. And as I mentioned earlier, we, knock on wood, we do extremely well with the small business community, as evidenced by us achieving the A for the last 3 years with the Small Business Administration's annual scorecard. So, but here's the point. You strategically source to contract more efficiently and achieve savings, but you have to do it while also achieving small business goals and anything else that you have to achieve. So another data point, and by the way, this was validated by an independent report by CSIS, the Center for Strategic Initiatives or Strategic and International Studies. They do an annual report on DHS. 40% of our contracts are awarded to large business, 30% to mid-size. Now, there, you can debate the definition of mid-size, and about 30% to small businesses. One last data point. Within our strategic – so if we contract for we spend $17.1 billion. About $2.7 billion is spent through our strategically sourced contracts, and within that – we range from 28% to 36% of those dollars going to small business. This is no small feat. There's a very specific reason why we in DHS are able to strategically source while also getting the appropriate dollars to small business and also engaging large and medium-sized businesses. One final point: when you're connecting with industry to buy things and solutions to protect this great country, you have got to connect with all sizes of businesses. And the facts support that for us at DHS.
Nick Nyack of the Homeland Security Department here. Your first priority on the list of four that you gave me earlier is quality people, and I want to talk more about developing that quality people point when we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Some questions on our Chief Acquisition Officer survey about that as part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. Jason Miller and I will continue our conversation with Nick Nyack of DHS in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Dave Graham, founder and president of MilitaryByOwner.com, a leading provider of advertising services and support to military families trying to sell or rent their homes. When looking for a web development company to design our site, we needed a battle-tested winner. Thankfully, we chose AmericanEagle.com. After reviewing many website developers that potentially could build a site for us, what tilted the scales in favor of AmericanEagle.com was their depth of experience and knowledge, 17 years of successful online development. AmericanEagle.com has helped the Military By Owner website to become a leader in the military real estate market. Working with AmericanEagle.com, we've experienced exceptional service and, most importantly, great returns on our investment. For these reasons, we're a proud partner with AmericanEagle.com for all our online needs. I strongly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 703-WEBSITE to learn how they can develop a website solution for you. That's AmericanEagle.com, 703-WEBSITE.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. With all the talk about cloud computing in the federal community, one has got to wonder, whose cloud are we really talking about? Cloud computing is changing the way IT resources are delivered, managed, and consumed. No small deal. As agencies seek agility, cost savings, security, and flexibility, the last thing you need is to get locked into a one-size-fits-all model that forces dependence on something you can't control. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware than any other platform, because virtualization is the foundation for cloud computing. Our solutions aren't just complete. They're completely flexible, so you can build the most important cloud in the world, your cloud.
The Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priorities, underwritten by VMware and Carahsoft, provides insight into CIOs' top priorities in 2013. Cloud, mobile, big data, and the changing landscape of budgets. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword survey, to see the results.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
1821 Binge. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus. With HHS HealthBeat, a study indicates people who can start to drink younger are more likely to turn out to be binge drinkers. At Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Andrew Plunk saw this in national survey data. He compared people who grew up in states where it was legal to drink at 18 with people from states where the age was 21. Plunk says people in the age 18 states were more likely to binge, which is five or more drinks on an occasion for men and four or more for women. He notes binge drinking is dangerous.
The acute impact of a heavy drinking episode can be very disastrous. All sorts of bad things happen to people whenever they're drunk.
The study in the journal Alcoholism, Clinical and Experimental Research was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Government IT professionals, register today for this year's Management of Change Education and Training event, May 19th through the 21st in Cambridge, Maryland, a short drive from D.C. Management of Change 2013, sponsored by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council, offers CEUs for interactive sessions on innovation, shared services, and information sharing. Learn more and register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller here talking about the CAO survey, Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. And our expert guest to talk about the results of the survey is Nick Nyack, the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. I want to combine a couple of the questions and talk about those results and how you're applying them at DHS, simply because when you gave us your list of priorities, you listed them all as quality, and then you have quality people, contracting, program support, and engagement with industry as your four priorities. The first one of those was people, and I'm sure that wasn't accidental. I hear that from your colleagues that I talk to anecdotally all the time, that that's the biggest challenge, biggest struggle, and it's borne out in our survey here. Question five, my agency's acquisition workforce is feeling the effects of my agency's budget challenges. 93% of our respondents said yes, only 7% disagreed. And among the effects that the budget issues are having the most, retaining workers, as we talked about before, and hiring more workers, as we talked about before. Dig into a little bit more what you're doing to maintain that quality cadre of people, because that seems to be the thing that your peers are dealing with the most too, and could use the most help on.
Yeah, it's let me just say, within acquisition and specifically in the contracting field, it's hard to retain people, and the reason it is because there is actually a career field in the federal government called contracting professional, and they're located in every federal agency in all three branches of the United States government. So it's very competitive. They are also, with the newer retirement system, the FERS system, having opportunities to leave government earlier and jump on the private side with all of the knowledge that they've obtained in their time in federal service. But it really is about one of the things at DHS that makes it easier is that the mission is compelling. So when you're an acquisition person and you're involved in acquiring something that's absolutely cutting edge and you can understand how that can affect every American citizen, that's pretty compelling. And people really do like challenging work at the end of the day. People don't mind working hard as long as they know it's challenging work and there's going to be something that matters at the end of it. Some of the other things that we're doing is, as I mentioned before, we've got the intern program. We certainly, as Jason mentioned, have our share of getting people from other agencies as well. So, while we're bringing people in at the entry level, we're always constantly bringing people in the middle. But it's a concern overall, the ability, first of all, because of the general situation that we're in government, there are many hiring pauses that are around. So you're not bringing in very much right now. And then there is some attrition, albeit the attrition has really gone down pretty low. In DHS, it's something like about 3 or 4% at the moment. And you just you can sort of speculate that it might be the general economic conditions, because as I mentioned, we've got a bunch of people who are hovering around retirement eligible. So there may be a moment in time in the next couple, 2-3 years where we're faced with an unusual circumstance of, 100 or 200 people going out the door. But, typically when we're faced with those kind of circumstances, we're pretty agile. I mean, people say things in government move, slow, but we're pretty agile. If we have a need, we can mobilize and probably hire a good number of people.
We gave you and your peers a list of 8 steps that we thought they may be taking to improve your acquisition workforce. The top 4 on that list, offering in-person classes, offering online classes, were number 1 and 2. And so the message I take away is training is really important. Number 3, developing a cadre of acquisition specialists. And number 4, providing key acquisition workers with mentors. That sounds like that your colleagues are taking the similar steps to what you're doing. Those sound like the things that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. We have all of those things in place. They're going to continue on regardless of budget issues. As I mentioned before, we run about 200 to 300 acquisition classes for our acquisition workforce of about 7,000 folks. I'll tell you an area, though, that I find fascinating that I'm going to drive. And so, when you look at sort of making an acquisition worker smarter, faster, right now it takes some time. I mean, we're all familiar with that thing called the FAR. And then there's so many other regulations around the FAR, and it would take you time to digest that. And I mentioned we have a 3-year intern program, development program. But it takes time. So how do you make people smarter, faster in their jobs? One of the things we looked at, or we're looking at right now, is what's the number one way in which our acquisition workforce buys things? And then looking at possibly creating a simulation to educate our workforce in that particular way of buying very quickly. So certainly having all the other training that goes on, but now you've got this one thing that you're faced with over and over and over from the very beginning, and you've expedited the learning process. So that's something I'm excited about because, when you think about it, they do that in NASA, they do that in the military, and they're very effective at it. And here we are spending, as a government, $500 billion contracting to do all kinds of good stuff for the American public. Might we not dip our toe in the water and try this simulation in this very, very important arena?
I could see it now. You sit in front of this big computer screen. You have the controls and, negotiation tools. And, it could be a great video game, right? Like SimCity acquisition workforce.
Whatever form it takes place, as long as the results are there, I'm happy.
Let's just do – I want to get started in this conversation, and then we'll probably have to go to break. But real quick, the other thing about budget, and you talk about acquisition workers, the impact on them, is other budget reduction steps they're taking. The top one that ranked was there's more pressure to cut contractor-vendor workforces. Is that having an effect yet at DHS? Are you having to look at your ratio?
You mean contractor employees?
Right, who's maybe involved in the acquisition workforce. Or contractor employees who maybe aren't specifically acquisition workers, but maybe they provide services in some way.
Certainly those cuts have occurred over at least the last couple of years. Can we actually see it or feel that impact? I would just say probably not really at this stage.
One of the priorities of the 4 that you listed earlier is engagement with industry, quality engagement with industry, and that's where I want to go when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Nick Nyack is our guest. He's the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. He's here with me and my colleague Jason Miller talking about our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. We'll continue our conversation in a minute.
Thank you. Dreaming of taking the next train out of town? We've got the ticket. Join FCA Bethesda in supporting the Children's Inn at NIH, a home away from home for critically ill children. Raffle tickets are on sale now for trips to London and Barcelona. $100 buys you an opportunity for the trip of a lifetime while helping to support the Inn. Winning tickets will be drawn March 23rd at the 15th annual FCA Bethesda Children's Inn Gala. Winners need not be present to win. To claim your ticket, visit childrensinngala.org.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of seven IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
Hundreds of thousands of furloughs and cuts to every agency program. Sequestration is officially a reality for federal employees, but many questions remain. How exactly will agencies implement the furloughs? How many unpaid days off can feds expect? And what will the cuts mean for contractors and industry? Federal News Radio is your source for the most up-to-date information on sequestration. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration, and while you're there, sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
This is Mark Amtower. For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Nick Nyack, the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department, is here to talk to Jason Miller and I about our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. And Nick, as we've mentioned a couple of times, you laid out earlier in the program your four priorities. One of those is quality engagement with industry. And one of the questions that we ask you and your peers as part of this survey, question 15, how would you rate the effectiveness of OFPP's Mythbusters campaign? 52% of your colleagues said not effective, 28% somewhat effective, and 16% not sure, covered just about everybody who responded to that question. Are you seeing, as a result of Mythbusters, a better interaction with agency or with industry? Is the dialogue improving in your view?
So first of all, I would say OFPP issuing Mythbusters 1, 2, and continuing on is a good thing. That's a positive message coming at the highest level to the acquisition workforce across government. And I would also add to that and just say that if you're in the trenches actually doing the work and awarding contracts, you know intuitively that engaging with industry is important. If you're spending $17.1 billion to buy things to protect this great country, you know that engagement with industry is important. You've got to try your best to find the best solutions, and you're going to do that by being open, communicating, and doing it constantly. I mean, this is something that just it's constant and it evolves over time. Now, having said that, I do want to say that it's challenging, because we also talked about resources and people and budgets and so forth and so on. So there's not an unlimited amount of people who are sitting around able to spend lots of time with lots of companies when, you know, some companies will win, not all companies will win, but you've got to connect with all companies. So it's a challenge. We're doing a number of things. I think the most important thing is leadership message and leadership support of in my case, this important priority.
That's actually where I wanted to go next. I wonder if the various challenges that we've talked about are changing the form of those interactions and maybe the tenor of those interactions. As you say, there's going to be less to go around for the industry people that want to get some of it.
Yeah. The first thing again is the leadership message. And the nice thing for at DHS is, you know, I'm a career executive, and above me are political appointees, and we've got some of the best who have industry engagement very high on their priority list. And it's just helpful that we're all out there talking to industry as much as you possibly can. Everybody's got a day job. And you need us to do it well. We want to do that well. And then we have to engage in a whole host of ways. I mean, the very obvious basic ones are for procurements. You know, you would love to have a request for information. You would love to have a draft RFP. You would love to have an industry day specific to a procurement. And you would love to be able to speak to every company one-on-one. Now, so there's the kind of the ideal. And then around that, you supplement with lots of different things. One of the things I think that's really, really most important is that our acquisition workforce and the people from industry and companies who are deciding on bidding and going through that, both sides, it's challenging. And having an understanding of what both are going through is really best. So one of the things that we've implemented is some meetings, I would say, where seminars, where we're bringing together our working level people. Because, you know, I get out there and I talk a bunch, and a lot of our leaders get out there and we talk as much as we can. But there's nothing like connecting the working level people on both sides to get an understanding of, you know, you put this out and that's what it put us through. And then the other side can say, well, we put it out because of this. And they say, oh, we didn't know that. And those kinds of things.
Well, that kind of leads to question 16. And my thought about that is, the question is, how well does your agency communicate on procurement matters with industry? 80% of our respondents said effectively, 20% said somewhat effectively, nobody said not effectively or not sure. And so the agency side of that equation seems to be very clear, and yet I hear from industry all the time, we'd like more. Is that a question of sufficiency, where you would think that your peers seem to be communicating the information they think industry needs, and industry just wants more because they always want more? Or do you think there might be some bit of a disconnect there?
I don't think there's a disconnect. I actually think both sides understand it pretty clearly. And I would just support both sides for what they've said. I wouldn't blame all the companies in America for saying, I need more information, I want more information. Why wouldn't they want that information? And to the extent that we can provide it, why wouldn't we provide it? And then I wouldn't, and then our workforce, you know, of course they believe that they're doing as much as they possibly can. And, you know, as we talked about resources and people being stretched, and they're always stretched. I mean, you know, we've got interesting, austere times now, but let's face it, it's always tight in general.
Are you looking at different approaches in these budget crunch times to connect with industry? One of the things that, for instance, NASA is doing with their Soup 5 is using social media, a blog, a wiki, things like that. GSA for their OASIS contract definitely has a blog. Are you going down those paths for what's the big contract that's out there now? What's it called? Eagle 2 or something?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about any contracts specifically, but nice try. No, that's a great point. You have to be, is the answer. I mean, you've got these tools out here. We are in the process of redoing our internet website, and when we're done, it's going to, again, just be another way in which we're being completely transparent and open to what we can provide, and it's going to give the ability for – we're going to use it in actually a number of ways that are going to be pretty cool. One is people can ask questions. Anybody can ask questions. You know, I like talking about it not just in terms of industry but any American taxpayer. And we're also going to be able to put out challenges that we might have where we might want ideas from industry. So it's going to be pretty cool.
So just don't do away with the ability of on these big IDIQ contracts you guys put out, what you're going to buy, your schedule of buying. That's one of the best things. And I'll get on my soapbox for 2 seconds that, and hopefully Mary Davies listening over at GSA. One thing you guys do very well is you put out your schedule buying, what's going to go through Eagle or First Source and when and by whom and what you're buying and just some basics. If GSA could do that on the schedules, that'd make my life so much easier.
Thank you.
Nick Nyack, my guest, along with my colleague Jason Miller, talking about our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is an important time in Washington, an opportunity for the federal government to do things differently. How will you help shape our future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink and restructure and turn resolve into results so you can tackle long-standing challenges in ways you couldn't have imagined yesterday. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life in Boron.
Here's Luke McCormick, Deputy Assistant Attorney General and Chief Information Officer, Department of Justice, on the Federal Executive Forum on Progress with IT Programs, sponsored by the FCA Homeland Security Conference.
I think the edge technology is going to be really, really critical going forward, and all the different types of devices that are going to be made available to our operators to perform those real important missions are going to be where the magic happens.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
AFCEA International is proud to bring you its 12th annual Homeland Security Conference. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, InfoZen, Kinetic North America, URS, and Verizon. Thanks to these companies for making this year's Homeland Security Conference such a success. For presentations and Signal magazine coverage, as well as information on AFCEA's upcoming Homeland Security Professional Development Course, go to www.afcea.org. Keyword, Homeland.
What is community policing? How does it contribute to the safety of neighborhoods? What is the mission of the DOJ's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services? How has the era of fiscal austerity changed the way law enforcement operates? And how can technology enhance community policing? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Bernard Malekian, director of the COPS Office, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. Nick Nyack of the Homeland Security Department is our guest. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller joining me in the questioning. And at the one of the last questions we asked in this survey, Nick, is about contract protests. 54% of our respondents don't expect more protests in the coming year than they've experienced in the past. 33% yes, 12% not sure. That's kind of a mixed bag. More people think they won't get them than will, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of hardening there. What is your sense about the whole sphere of protests that you're seeing?
Yeah, so just like everybody else, what I had been reading in the press was that protests were on the rise. So I wanted to see what was going on at DHS since I'd been there, and actually the numbers were declining over the last couple of years. And but look, protests happen, and you deal with them and you manage them. It's part of the process, and it's a good part of the process that we have that in place within our acquisition system.
When I talk to contract attorneys, one of the things that they tell me about protests is they advise their clients, you need to be real careful about what you protest and what you don't, mainly because this person or this agency is going to be your customer. You would like them to be your customer. Does that play a role in the relationship that you have? As we talked earlier about you want quality engagement with industry. Does that ever enter into that conversation?
Not on the federal side. I mean, you know, we know that this is part of the system. It's everybody's right to protest. You know, companies protest, and those same companies have contracts, you know, all over the government. So no.
What's interesting is the oversight piece. When we asked about oversight, that also got about 88% of the respondents said more oversight is expected from GAO, IGs, and such. Is that typical? I mean, is that the state of what we're at now with the acquisition community? Or from your perspective, give me a sense of that plus the broader view of where we're at with acquisition across government.
So across government, I would just say if you're spending $500 billion, expect oversight. In DHS specifically, we've got tons of it's 108. It's well known committees and subcommittees that have oversight over DHS. We also have the usual, the GAO and IG. I'm pleased that we've got very positive working relationships with everybody, all of those stakeholders. I think if you're doing a good job, don't whine about the oversight. Deal with it, handle it, view them as partners. Just like in your personal life, your children, you're providing oversight to your children, and you know it's good for them, and later on they thank you for it.
We have about a minute left. Any final thoughts that you want to share about any of the topics that we've covered today, Nick?
I think the thing I'd like to share is what I usually like to mention at some point anytime we're having an interview, and that is just I want to thank all the 7,000 to 8,000 DHS acquisition personnel for everything they do. A specific shout out to my own community, the contracting community, and my own staff, as well as the 15,000 contractors that we have, and every contractor who's interested in connecting with DHS together. We've got to find ways continuously to buy things to protect the United States at the least cost to the American taxpayer.
It's great to talk to you today. Thank you very much for coming in. Thanks for participating in this survey series. Appreciate your time, Nick, very much.
Thank you.
Nick Nyack is the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. My colleague Jason Miller and I talking to him about our Chief Acquisition Officer Survey, part of Federal News Radio's CXO Surveys 2013 Priority Series, sponsored by VMware. You can read the results at federalnewsradio.com. And you can hear the conversation with Nick Nyack posted there later this afternoon. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.